And within that welcome, I'm also welcoming myself, of course, as I'm also just at the beginning of this retreat with you. But I really hope that it's going to be a really supportive and beneficial time for all of us. And I just wanted to take a little bit of time now, just to kind of set the scene for the retreat, not to define it, not to tell you, you know, what it's going to be, but just speak a little bit towards the potential of the things that maybe we can explore here together. So I'm aware that this is a very kind of precious time of the year, the time of the year where discos happen in the neighboring villages, and we're all here to silently listen to that together. And of course, it's also, you know, Yom Kippur is occurring around this time, and that can have a cultural and, you know, really kind of deep felt significance for some of us. And it's not, it's not really like a theme of the retreat, so to say, but we hope that the themes of the retreat are going to be conducive to supporting that. And of course, if it's not your thing at all, you want to escape from that even, then, you know, it's going to be possible to, we won't be constrained by it, won't be limited by that. And we hope that it's going to be a time where we can actually really support what it is that we're interested in awakening, what it is we're interested in supporting. And, you know, as Zara invited us to reflect, like, what is it that I'm here for? What is it that I'm here to support, to deepen, to dive into? And we hope that that sense of creativity, that sense of beauty, that sense of love, that sense of divinity, whatever that is for you, that you're here for, here to be devoted to be dedicated to be in support of, may that happen. In essence, whenever we come together to practice in the Dharma, we are heading towards becoming boundless. Becoming boundless. And at least in English, this is a very nice word for describing these teachings, because we can be bound in things. We can get really tied up in our experience. We really get tangled up in our experience. And there are particular ways that that happens. You know, we'll notice it when we're more demanding, when we're more frightened and agitated, all of that. We can unbind into ways of kindness, of spaciousness, of ease. Yeah. And the other way that we can use this sense of becoming boundless is that there can be this sense of, you know, my experience goes up to here, you know, and that's the bound of it. That's where I stop, and the rest of the world continues. And that can start to dissolve, erode, disappear. And we start to feel this kind of boundlessness, from a sense of interconnectedness, but also a sense of, you know, who's included in this heart, you know, who's included in this mind, what's allowed, what's permitted, what's possible for us. And all those limitations can be unbound. Yeah. So I'm going to pause again and just check. Does anyone like a translation? Yeah. Maybe? Yeah? It's a volume question. You want more volume? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. More. Yeah. Crank me up. Okay. No, I'll speak louder. It's all right. Don't worry about that. So yeah, now you're getting it. Okay. It's going to be different at different places in the hall. Slowly, we're going to have a different sound system in here over the days where it'll be more equated. But those near the speaker, if your ears start bleeding, please, you know, find a safe spot. And of course, those who are further from the speaker, if you really can't hear at any time and you notice that's a repeating pattern, you know, kind of come towards the speakers. So really do feel free to have a translation if you'd like one. The second bit that I wanted to speak about is, for some reason, in relationship to this time of year, this, you know, space that we're in, I was remembering the story of Angulimala, which is a really lovely story. It's someone who gained this name, which is basically, it's finger necklace. And they were in a bad way, finger necklace. And they had this mission to get 1,000 fingers by killing people. So it was a very devastating situation for a human being to find themselves in, and they were causing a very devastating situation in the world. And however we kind of understand it, that the Buddha seemed to have an inclination to stop this person causing so much suffering to themselves, causing so much suffering in the world. And there was also basically an intention to stop this person by force. And so it's a really beautiful story of non-violent intervention. But it's also a real story of forgiveness, of transcendence, of rehabilitation of someone who is about to become very outcast from the community. So Angulimala is on number 999, and they're seeking their next victim and the final victim. And I don't want us to over analyze this kind of thing, but obviously Angulimala had issues. Yeah. Something somewhere had happened, life had lost meaning in both senses. Their life, the life of others, lost meaning. Terrible state to be in. They definitely didn't value their own life, and they'd lost sight of the possibilities of what could be done with a human existence. Yeah. So in a way, you know, they're an extreme version of how we can feel at times. Yeah. Life, does it feel precious? Does it feel precious every single moment? No, it doesn't, does it? It doesn't. Sometimes we wish our life away. No, I can't wait to get somewhere else, you know, that kind of feeling. And yet, also, Angulimala was undertaking an activity that was despised by everyone, and then wearing it, you know, like as an act of pride or something, wanting to wear this disgusting thing of the victims of their, of what they were doing. And this whole situation is then, you know, put next to, maybe this is just some narrative thing, but like next to the fearlessness of the awakened one, yeah, who steps into this story. And people say, don't go down there. Angulimala is on 999 and is very keen to complete this task. You know, don't go down there, blessed one. We love having you around. We find your Dharma sublime. You know, your teachings are so beneficial. They're really like turning things around in our society. Don't go down there. But of course, you know, there's no question in the Buddha's mind. They're actually here for one reason, and they state it many times through the suttas. I'm here to relieve suffering. Yeah. And there's definitely suffering in this story. Yeah, there's definitely suffering in this situation. And there's a very inspirational quality, fearlessness, or sometimes we call it courage or bravery. And as a sidebar point, you can kind of reflect for yourself, it's actually one of those phenomena that does not exist. Courage, yeah. Like the one who is feeling courageous, if anyone's ever said to you, wow, that was really brave, you say, well, I just did it. It doesn't really exist that way. But this is what's happening. And so the Buddha is in a very different space to Angulimala, and this becomes more clear. And it's not that they're walking into a trap, which is Angulimala's appearance, but they're actually walking into the escape of a far greater trap. And a vision of bringing harmlessness out of a being who has the intention to harm. Yeah, that greatest transformation, that most masterful of magic that a being can undertake. And so in all great films of this nature, a chase ensues. And Angulimara spots the Buddha and starts heading towards them. And the Buddha, already having noticed Angulimara, continues walking. But at the same time, points out to Angulimara, we do not see the same world. We don't see the same world. You see a world that is distorted by your pain and your anger and your willingness to devalue what is most precious. We don't see the same world. And this is shown in this story that as Angulimara makes chase and is running towards the Buddha is walking, but the gap between them keeps extending as if the Buddha is uncatchable. And the more that Angulimara runs, the further the earth expands. Yeah, it's a wonderful kind of magical realism in this story. Yeah. But it also shows to us our perception of reality is fabricated. It is made up. And it's very much affected by what we pay attention to, how we pay attention to it. Our perception of experience is filtered by what we're paying attention to right now. Yeah. So if someone tells a story, some kind of images in the mind suddenly create, and there we are. And then suddenly, no, you're back in this room. Remember, you're in Endor. Yeah. You're not in this story, however good the story might be. Where we pay attention, the imagination plays its part to create the experience that we're having. Every so often, we listen to the rhythm of the music in the background. We remember where we are, what it is, what's happening. Oh yes, we're here to listen to the disco of the nearby villages. Boom, then we're back here with the Buddha walking slowly, Angulimara chasing frantically, and the distance keeps growing. And Angulimara calls out, "Stop! Stop!" And the Buddha turns around and still continues to disappear into the distance, but speaks clearly and says, "Angulimara, I have stopped. When are you going to stop?" And in this moment, something cracks open. The heart is once more revealed, and Angulimara recognizes things are not what they appear to be. And there is something possible for me. And they stop. They stop. In this kind of magical realism, when the magic feels real, its effect is very potent. And the magic here won Angulimara's respect. And they were willing to actually let go of that fantasy they had. Regained their sense of meaning, regained their sense of value. And, you know, it's a wonderful story of salvation and redemption. And for that elusive courage needed to enter into a relationship of forgiveness. The courage to face the pain that we have inside, the courage to face the pain that we've played a part in. There's some journey of atonement, some journey of forgiveness, some journey of realignment and release. When I remember this story, I also remember when I met Zohar and we were practicing together, that we would sometimes say to each other a refrain that the Buddha said to Angulimara. after they became a monk and were in this practice, and they received a lot of hatred for the harms that they'd caused earlier in their life. You know, getting beaten up sometimes and harassed, even though that they had dedicated their life to nonviolence now. You know, they were experiencing a lot of hardship. And there was just this line saying, "Bear it, bhikkhu, bear it. And there has been times in our practice, yeah, in all of our lives, where it's been just important to hear that. It's like, bear it. Don't run away again. Don't react again. Calm, soothe, soften. You know, whether that's mosquitoes, uninvited music, although this music's good, right? But other music could go the other way. Feeling like giving up when it's hard. Those moments are going to come. Can we bear it, bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, noble ones? Or when that urge to do something else arises, yeah. Or we're already doing something and we don't feel like stopping. Can we bear it? Bear the loss. For something greater. But also earlier in the story, is that also a question for us? When will you stop? When will you stop? Will we at least pause and feel? And this is one of those places where this feels like it really parallels with Yom Kippur, the great stopping, yeah. The non-doing, which is both symbolic and kind of ritualistic of this time, as I see it. And on a path of peace, peacefulness. How can we stop harming if we can't stop and look, stop and feel, stop and recognize? Can you hear me at the back still? No. You must tell me when you can't hear me. Hallelujah. You can't hear me? Some can, some can't. I can't tell. Yeah. Okay. More. But just wave whenever you can't. Honestly, it's good to know. Still not there? No. I didn't hear a difference either. Do we have anything left in the volume? Yeah. Okay. It'd be very natural for me when I hear it loud to think, oh yeah, I can need to go quieter, but I get a sense this is close to the right bit for you. Yeah. So when we stop and we open up the chance to be able to listen, to recognize, you know, the habits that bind us in limitations. Yeah, these ideas of becoming boundless requires us to stop and look. Meditation as a practice is essentially listening. Maybe I can just check with Zara. Did we put up mindfulness is kindfulness, this thing? No. It goes up tomorrow. Oh, how nice. So, really? Okay. So there's a particular line, I think, on this sheet we'll put up tomorrow that mentions that... Maybe I'm misremembering it. This is why it's going up tomorrow. But like sometimes we can feel how hard it could be to come on a silent retreat. And I expect at times it's felt like, oh, letting go of so much, giving up so much. Particularly this kind of sense of communication. And, you know, many of us at certain times at least enjoy conversation. But what do we really enjoy in conversation? Is it, you know, forming sounds into words that, you know, someone else can say, whoa, yes, those are words. It's much more that sense of listening and being listened to, I think, that we really love in a conversation. And it's a really lovely gift to give, listening, you know, to really listen to another, or to feel ourselves really being heard. And so when we stop, we give that gift of listening to ourselves. And in many ways, meditation can be the best of all kinds of listening, the deepest, most sensitive, intimate listening. And can we be a true friend to ourselves in that listening? A true friend. And we can listen with real honesty to what we find. And also humility. Not being over-identified with what we discover. That humility to recognize, this is what's coming through. It's what's coming through and it's what needs to be met. That non-identification with that honesty. And can we do what I recently heard Pema Chodron saying? Can we forgive ourselves for being human? Can we forgive ourselves for being human? Yeah, like a good friend would. Each moment of noticing, of tuning in, is a chance to plant seeds, the seeds of our intentions into this moment. And perhaps that first intention can be an acceptance and a forgiveness. This is how I am right now. This is how I'm appearing. This is what's here. I'm gonna stop. And there's a beautiful word for this quality of stopping, of noticing. Some of you will have heard it before, because Zara and I are both big fans of this word, and this word is gom. Gom. Meaning to pause, to notice, to become familiar, to become a friend of our experience. And from there, you can take it in all kinds of directions according to your intention. So it could be this kind of beginner's mind that's just, what is this? What is this? Really, what is this? What's happening here? What can I get to know? One of my favorite meditations questions is, what am I not noticing about this moment? What seems so obvious about this? And I'm not seeing more. Sometimes I turn it on itself and say, what do I not notice that I'm not noticing? What magic is occurring here that I'm not seeing? Like the Buddha pulls off on Angulimala. We don't all see the same world, but we believe the world we see. That stopping, that starting afresh, to renew, to rebuild. But yeah, let us start with stopping, pausing, slowing, and allowing ourselves to get to know, to become familiar. Let's have a quiet minute together to close this. Yeah.